Welcome to the Vertical Shift Podcast, where we engage in candid conversation about life topics and real issues from a Christian perspective. I'm Tommy.
I'm Jeff.
And I'm Philip.
All right. He's back. So I just couldn't wait for us to start this episode because I'm going to let everyone know right now who's listening. I got on to Jeff for real after that last episode. You can't just like stop it like that.
I can.
No, you can't. I mean, like, you can stop it in that position. Don't get me wrong. Like, mm-hmm. We could have said, hey, that's, but then you just like hit the button.
Done.
But Tommy, in all fairness, he had to have time to say that whole email at the beginning.
That's true. It took our podcast too long, so I had to cut it off.
This guy wants to shorten everything but the email address. Well, goodness. Justin's out again. Well, we had to kind of kick him out this time because Philip needs to finish his story. Because
that's true.
I am pretty positive that I'm going to be getting some text messages for people to say, hey, air that episode early. Mm-hmm. And sorry, I mean.
See, that's why I did it abruptly.
Yeah.
Because people
Tommy,
it's good. Trust me.
It's not that good. When you go back and listen to it, you'll be like, what kind of ending is that? Like, you're not even teasing it.
Oh, it was a tease.
You didn't even tease it.
It's the five letters.
But then it's like.
Thanks for tuning in.
I know. Like, that's like my mom. I talked to my mom on the phone. This is an honest truth story right here. And it's a good thing. I'm not complaining because my. Miss Debbie, I love you. My wife's mother is direct opposite. My mom is quick to get off the phone. She ain't dilly-dallying around. It's like, all right, Mom, it's good talking to me. I'm like, okay.
I love you.
Yeah, she's just like, there? Well, I don't want to waste your time. And, you know, I hang up the phone because I know you're busy.
And you say Miss Debbie won't get off the phone?
Oh, Miss Debbie's like, all right, well, I guess I'm going to let you go. You know what? Let me tell you about this. And, Jerome. And then she's like, I'm going to take it. I'm like. Crickets.
Mother actually calls me not having anything to say and then asks me what she needed to say to me.
Mm. Wow. That's
so good. We can spend an hour on the phone talking about what I thought she wanted to say.
Mm. Hey, that's kind of good, though, because you can pick the topic, because every time I talk to my mom, it's politics.
We get a lot of that, too. So fun story about my mom. She's very into politics. Mm. She came up during the last election, not the most recent one, to trick-or-treat with my kids. Mm. She drove 7.5 hours to go trick-or-treating with my kids. We go in this neighborhood. The third house we went to had a cardboard cutout of Donald Trump. I lost my mother for the rest of the night. Mm. She stayed.
Mm, hung out.
Yeah.
Wow.
Did she know it wasn't him?
I didn't want to be the one to tell her.
Thanks,
that
man.
Was a good one.
Oh,
that was a good one.
They come out every now and then.
Man, far frequent. That was a good one. Wow.
All right.
Well, because I do want to say, too, that I've been getting some people like who are catching up on the podcast episodes, and they're like, Tommy, Jeff is mean to you and bullies you. Mm. And I told him even during those times, I said, hey, you guys are not making yourself look good by making fun of me all the time. So,
is this where you want to be when Jesus comes back?
Yeah.
Making fun of poor little Tommy Duke.
That's right.
All right.
Thank you, Philip.
I'm sorry, Tommy.
We're in a better place now.
We're in a better place. We've moved on from that.
We have. Mm-hmm. Quick update. As of today, 20 pounds. I am 20.
Tommy.
What? No. Bro, I'm wearing a belt.
That's true. That is true.
I'm down 20. Today I weighed 203. I started this journey at 223, is the heaviest I ever weighed in my whole life. And I need to get down to 170.
I'm proud of you, man.
Increments. You don't want to be, but you're.
I don't want to be.
I can see the look
in
your face.
Because I'm at my heaviest. That's why I'm not.
Well, you carry it better than I do. I don't carry weight well at all. Mine doesn't distribute all throughout my body. Goes to two places, my face and my gut. Like a fat person that got stung by a bunch of bees. I don't know. It's terrible, but anyway, that's for me. Like, I didn't feel good about where I was, and I had to make some drastic changes. And it's good to see the effort paying off. But I'm not where I want to be.
Well, you know, you talk about me being mean to you, but you know what I did today?
What?
I grabbed my arm and I went, I need to work out because my triceps are not as firm as they used to be. And Tommy said they were like a dead fish. See how he's laughing, people? Yeah. I don't want to hear anything about how I'm mean to you.
I admit that. One time I walked up to Jeff and I grabbed my arm and it felt like an elderly man. But I think it was just you weren't ready for me.
Did you hear that, Amanda? Did you hear that? Now who's mean? Yeah.
Me.
Yeah. There we go.
I was just making up for all the time you're mean to me.
Right. Mm-hmm. No.
All right. Look, let's stop stalling. Golly. So, Philip, we left off where you'd had enough and you wrote 5 letters.
Yep.
And I'm assuming these weren't love letters, but maybe in some ways they were.
Like A, B, C, D letters.
E. A, B, C, D, E.
I don't get it.
I don't either. That joke went over my head.
Yeah, must not have been that funny. No, that wasn't funny. So, yeah, actually.
Oh, letters. Like
yeah,
the,
letters. Yeah.
That's not the right one. Yeah.
There you go. That one's better.
I got you. No, yeah. I was thinking like these weren't happy letters, but.
Well,
I'll let you describe them.
And you know what's weird is because it depends on your mentality.
That's right. Well, I was going to say.
Right. Yeah. So for the reader, probably not happy letters. But when you get to a certain place, you feel like maybe it was a happy letter. And so basically what they were, like I said, I was just kind of done. I thought if this is the best life gets,
I
just don't want, I just don't want any part of this. Mm. I had done everything that I could do to change my life and I kept changing it, but it just kept changing for the worse. And so I wrote these 5 letters, because I was going to kill myself. And like I said, I was staying with a friend. I couldn't afford my own place. So I wrote these letters. I laid them out on the bed. One was for him to tell him where to send them to find me. I didn't want to do this in his house and leave him with a mess and all that. Mm-hmm. And so I go out to the woods with a barred gun because I didn't own anything. His gun and I spent the afternoon disassembling and reassembling that gun about 10 times, kind of contemplating the decision I'm going to make and go out to the woods and just kind of stand there for a little while. Not really thinking anything, to be honest, just kind of just spaced out. And finally I just felt like, all right, if I'm going to do this, it's got to be now. And so I decided that I was going to take my life. And when I attempted to, it didn't work and it jammed. And so I, knowing about guns, I grew up with guns. I was in the Marine Corps. I cleared it out and I took a shot at a local tree, like one that was close to me, and it went off. And honestly, that scared me. Mm-hmm. The fact that it didn't go off for me and then the sound of it going off at the tree kind of startled me and really brought me to reality of, okay, this is it. And I took a deep breath. For some reason, I closed my eyes like that was going to do anything. But put the gun up to my forehead, and I heard another click. And while, you know, I hear the story now, and even just saying those things, like I feel this rush of relief. But at the time, that's not what I felt.
Yeah. Wow.
At the time, it was like, man, I can't even succeed at failing. I'm trying to kill myself and I can't even do that right.
Yeah.
And I just kind of dropped the gun right there in the woods. But we later went back and got it. So we didn't just leave one in the woods, but I dropped it there at the time. And I went back and just sat on the end of the bed on these letters that I'd written and just defeated.
Yeah.
Thinking, man, I can't even fail. Thinking of how can I do this in a way that I can succeed, that I can just end this because something has to work. Very broken, very defeated. And
so it wasn't in that moment, it wasn't like an epiphany, like I don't need to do this. You were mad or
I was upset. It didn't work.
You felt even more like a failure.
Right.
And you were thinking about how else am I going
to
do it?
How can I guarantee success in this?
Wow.
And it's crazy to think, like I said, now even telling that part of the story every time, it's almost this like rush of relief.
Oh man.
But in the moment that was not it.
Wow.
And so I'm thinking, okay, we got to figure out something a little more sure proof, something that's going to work. And in this meantime, I end up getting arrested. You're a drug addict. You tend to get arrested. You do dumb things. You get locked up. So this happens. I'm in jail. Had been in there a few times, living this lifestyle. And so when you've been in there a few times, they stop letting you out before you go to court. And they just say, well, you're just going to sit here. Thank God for that. Time to sober up, whether you want to or not. So I'm sitting there for several weeks, and first week or so in jail, you just kind of sleep, right? You're exhausted, especially coming off a lot of stuff, and you just sleep about that first week away. And first week's easy time because you wake up to eat and you go back to sleep. After that, you can't sleep anymore. You've slept so much, you're just awake. And all you can do is just think and process the reality of where you are. And as I'm sitting there, I remember it was jail was very overcrowded. They didn't have enough beds for everybody. And so I'm on the floor. They give you like a sit-up mat, and you're kind of on the floor on a glorified sit-up mat. I'll never forget it. It was cell 208, pod B of Coweta County Jail. It was the bottom left-hand corner right next to the shower. I'm on the floor. And I'm having this internal conversation with God, but it very much felt like we were both talking out loud. I wasn't saying anything out loud, but I felt it felt as if we were both speaking. And I remember I just thought, as I looked at my life and just processed everything that I'd been through, everything I'd put others through, and just what a mess everything was. And, you know, I'd always heard about this God, and I knew all the things about this God that supposedly loves me so much, right? He somehow wants me. He's pursuing me and all these things. And I'd said those things in church, and I'd heard about this God. And I remember I just said, God, look, there's nobody else. Like, I wish I had the story. I could say I came to God because I was so overwhelmed with this passionate love for him that I couldn't control. I came to God because there was nobody else. And I just said, God, I really don't know if you want me. I you're crazy if you do. Like, why would you want this mess? But if you do, then you just have it. Like, all of it. Nothing I'm doing works.
Yeah.
I don't want to do this anymore. And it was this weird... So I'm cocooned in a blanket, right? I'm over my head, like everything.
Because you're in a populated, I mean, you're not in like a single cell here. No, you're in like general population.
Yeah, so it's a bunch of people. My cell alone has like several people in it. And so I'm cocooned, like head covered up in this blanket against the wall. And so I had this like feeling, like not this emotional feeling. It was literally like someone was
physical
touching
feeling.
Me. And when you're in jail and you're on the floor in a blanket and somebody touches you, that's not good.
No.
And so I freak out.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden I pop my head out of this blanket and I'm like, all right, who's in here? And nobody's in there. Literally in this cell, like it is empty aside from me at this time. So I kind of cocoon myself back in my blanket and I'm kind of continuing this conversation, but it's more of a silent conversation on my end. Like I don't even know what else to say. Like, I'm to the point where I have no words. And the one statement I said is all I know to say to God. But it's like he's just kind of talking to me without words in this moment. And I feel that same sensation again. And I still kind of freak out. I'm still in jail, so I'm still kind of freaking out about this. But it literally feels like somebody's just kind of like leaning on me almost. And I don't freak out quite as much. I kind of peek up and no one's in there. And so I go back and it was like, as soon as I covered back up, I just felt like somebody just grabbed me, like just squeezed me, not in like a scary way, just like the biggest hug I've ever had. And man, I broke. Like I was snotting it up, nasty crying, sitting here on the floor, another thing you don't want to do in jail. And it was just like, God was just like, man, like, I got you. Like, I'm here. And to be honest, I'd never felt that kind of safety in my life.
I was going to say, have you ever been embraced like that by a man?
Never.
Like, father figure?
Never.
Uncle?
Yeah. And so it overwhelmed me.
Sure.
And I'd love to say, like, I stood up and I always say, like, it would be really cool if my story was, as soon as this happened, I stand up and they're like, Philip Nathan, time to go. And the door, like you just hear the lock open and out I go. And
angels are in the background.
Everybody's applauding like, whoa, yeah, you got Jesus. Like
my shackles just fell off and I walked out.
Yeah, but that's not what happened. Right. That's not even close. Yeah. Like my circumstances were still what they were. I still had the charges. They still weren't letting me out. And I was still sitting there. Mm-hmm. And so I remember I picked up a Bible. That there's always tons of Bibles in jail. Like, so I picked up a Bible and I'm reading, and I remember being disappointed that, you know, I grew up in church. I knew all the stories and I would read, and I was just expecting like new things just to pop up here. And so I'm reading these stories. The preachers come in every Sunday, a different preacher tells you about the prodigal son. Mm. Like that's the one sermon they all give. And so I'm like, all right, give me something new. Like, right. And so I was just like, hey, I'm going to read, but I just wanted to spend my time. I had nothing but time. And so I spent a lot of time in prayer, but not talking, right? Like that's, I'm still at that point where I don't even know what to say. Mm-hmm. And so just letting God, like, just talk to me. And for the first time feeling that, all right, this isn't a God who is like laughing at the fact that I'm in jail. Mm-hmm. This isn't a God like, here, dummy, if you'd have done what I said, you wouldn't be here and like enjoying my pain. This is a God who is like sitting in there with me, mm-hmm. and a God who loves me despite the fact that that's where I am, and just pouring into me. And so I'm my whole perspective of God is changing and it's shifting. And I, all of a sudden calling God Father isn't a bad thing. Right, because that was a bad word for me. And so things are starting to shift, and I get a call from my lawyer, comes and visits me up there, my public defender, because again, I'm broke. And he says, all right, well, we've talked to the DA, and we've got a deal for you. I said, all right. So you're a habitual offender. Yeah. And to be honest, part of me was thinking, all right, God's going to do something big here. Mm-hmm. And he's like, hey, the best we're going to give you, or they're going to give you, is a 10-2-3. What that means is a 3-year prison sentence and a 7-year parole sentence. Mm. And man, I'm deflated.
How old are you now? You're 25, 26?
I'm about almost 27 at this time. So I'm deflated. I'm thinking, man, this is not what I'm expecting. Mm. You know, I'm thinking, still have a little bit twisted view of God in that respect, that I thought he was just going to step in and change it all for me. And so I hear that and I'm like, all right, well, I mean, the best we can do is the best we can do, right? I mean, if that's what it is, it's not like I didn't do the crime. And it was just. So, okay. And I remember through the next several weeks while we're waiting to go to court, I would walk laps in the big common area. It's nothing else to do, literally. So I'd walk big circles, big ovals around this area. And I'd pray. And I prayed, and I'd say every day, I'd say, God, look, I'm okay if I go to prison. Like, I've earned it. But I don't want to lose this there. Because county jail and prison are very different things. Mm-hmm. And, like, I just don't let me lose this. Like, let me keep this when I go. And at the end, I would always sign it off real honest.
What do you mean by this? Keep this.
Like this relationship. Gotcha. That This closeness that him and I had for the first time in my life. Like, I didn't want to lose that.
Sure, sure.
And so, you know, I would say, look, just as long as I can keep this, it's okay. Like, he needed my permission, but like, it's okay. But I would always sign it off with this real moment of honesty that, God, I don't mean any of that.
Right.
Like, but like, I want to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so I would always ask God, I'm going to pray this again tomorrow. Help me to mean it more tomorrow. And I would pray that every day, every day, every day. And so finally I get called to the courthouse. My court date shows up and I'm waiting in the cell behind the judge's chambers before you actually go out in court when they call you out. And I'm just in my head, I'm just praying this over and over. I mean, on a loop, like, God, it's okay. Like, I'm okay if I go, just let me keep this. I don't mean it yet, but I want to. And I can tell you the moment that it like flushed over me, like this moment of just acceptance of that. And it was like he answered that prayer. He didn't answer the prayer like that I thought was going to be, hey, you just walk out. He answered the one that mattered more.
I'm with you.
And so he answered that prayer, and I was just genuinely at peace with what was about to happen. Like, hey, I'm about to go to prison. And that's okay, because God's going with me. And we're going to be okay. And so it felt like moments later, it was probably an hour or so later, I get called out to go in front of the judge. And I won't say any names on here just in case one of our three listeners knows him. But
there's a well-known judge.
Yeah, there's a well-known judge in the area. Yeah. Whose goal before retirement was 2.5 million years sentenced because the guy before him had 2 million.
Wow.
And so his goal was that.
That's a weird, I don't know. Anyway,
it's small town judge thing. Yeah. So, but he was not a judge of mercy. We'll say that. He was not known for that. He was known for the harshest sentences of all the judges. And I thought, great, that's the one you want. So we get up there and he always asks you, hey, here's your charges. You know, what do you plead? Guilty. Are you really pleading guilty or you're coerced? No, man, I did everything you're saying. And more, didn't say that, but did all of these things, and I'm guilty. And so he looks at the deal that the DA had made on his paper up there, and he said, you know, I never do this. My wife laughs about this to this day. She tears up when we talk about
it. She was there.
She was in the audience out there.
Yeah.
I don't know if the audience, whatever that is.
Yeah.
Because she was my girlfriend at the time.
Mm-hmm.
Right. She was there in the courtroom. To hear the sentencing, had you talked to her before and say, this is what I'm likely going to get?
She knew.
Okay.
Yeah, because my public defender, I mean, obviously, she wasn't in jail. She could just pick up the phone. He had been communicating with her, too. I'd given permission, you know, her and my mom could have conversation with him. So my mom was out there. She was out there. So they're out there, and he kind of looks down. He reads the recommendation.
Before you say anything, had you already talked to your girlfriend and your mom about your conversion in prison
and all
that. So they knew they could probably sense some change in you already.
For sure. Because they were both Christians. They had both been saved and had these experiences and were praying like crazy that I would get there. They knew all about that. We'd had lots of conversations about that. And so they're out there. The judge looks at the DA's recommendation, 3-year prison sentence, 7-year parole. He says, man, you know, I never do this. And he says, I don't really know why I'm doing this now. And I'm thinking, normally, if they reject the DA's recommendation, it means they're giving you the full sentence.
They don't think it's enough.
Right.
He needs to make that 2.5 million years.
Right. So he's going to say, hey, how about the whole 10? Because it was up to a 10-year sentence that could be imposed. And so I'm getting really nervous now. Like, God, I said 3 years, man. Like, you know, I'm getting nervous. I literally walked out of court that day free. I was on probation, but...
So he just said, hey, I'm going to suspend the sentence or time served, I don't know, and then you get probation.
So he said, I don't think prison is going to be good. His exact words, I don't think it's what you need. And he said, I don't think that you need to be there. I think that there are other places that will help you more. And he said... something to the effect, he called himself Santa Claus, which was kind of funny to me. And he said something about him being Santa Claus. He said, I'm going to give you a gift. Don't waste it.
So he probably, I'm just going to put several assumptions in here, but he probably said that out loud, like, hey, I'm going to think of me as Santa Claus. And you didn't share that part in the other ones, but I'm sitting here thinking now, because he didn't understand himself why his mind was changing.
Sure.
And he was trying to figure out, okay, why is my mind changing, but I'm going with it, so I'm going to make this little quip or joke about it, when we know why his mind was changing.
Right. Well, here's where my brain went to it, you know, hearing it the second time too. But here, your version of God as this, like, harsh judge, right? And here you are
in front of
the harshest judge who's all of a sudden now full of grace, and just seeing that being
merciful.
Poured out. Man, that's that's cool.
Yeah.
That's really cool.
And so, he couldn't even explain why at the time, and I haven't had a conversation with him since, thankfully, to find out. Right. I did send him a letter on my 1-year anniversary of that date. I sent him a letter. Thanking him and letting him know that his mercy wasn't wasted.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
But I don't even know if he ever read it.
Sure.
But I just,
One thing you said that stuck with me, it stuck with me when you said the first time, it's really standing out now. I really like how you framed the way you prayed and the honesty in that, hey, I really don't mean this now, but help me to mean it at some point.
Right.
I think that's something that a good takeaway for all of us when we're praying for things. A lot of times we're going through something and we don't know how to pray because there may be some bitterness or there may be some fear. Mm-hmm. There's other emotions that kind of get in the way of us being able to really stand in the peace of God. But there's nothing wrong for us to admit that to him.
Right.
He's experienced those same emotions. You know, Jesus has. He knows those. I just think that that's, I just want to highlight that for me. That stood out too. So I appreciate you sharing that. It's good.
One thing that with that, like that years later, so I read the story of Jesus and he's, you know, he's got this dad who's got the son who's, you know, this demon's throwing him in fire and all that. He's going to all the experts, all the disciples. Nobody can cure his son. And the phrase that the dad says to Jesus, Jesus asks him, do you think I can do this? Mm. He's like, yeah, kind of.
Mm.
But help fill in those gaps for me. Like help the areas that I don't believe. And I remember I had never read that before until later. And that brought me kind of full circle back to those moments. Mm-hmm. Is that God doesn't, like he knows where we're at and he's willing to fill in the gaps. If we give all the faith we can muster, like he's faithful to fill it in.
And it only requires a mustard seed of faith.
Right. Because that's all I had.
Yeah.
Sliver. Like
my head knows the truth, but my heart is worrying like crazy.
Right.
You know, and how do you align?
But I think that's good for just the people listening, for my own reminder that to be honest, I mean, he already knows.
Sure.
But he wants to see us to be vulnerable with him and to say those things out loud and allow then him to use that moment to bring that to light and for us to really have an interaction with him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's good. All right. So,
I end up
out of prison.
I get to leave.
Yeah.
Like I'm not even going back to county jail. Like I get to walk out in my own clothes.
So I'm assuming your mom and girlfriend are like
they're losing
hysterical.
It.
Like just so
they are losing it. Like they don't like, how did this happen? I mean, expecting this is the last time they're going to see me not through glass for quite a while.
Right.
I mean, y'all are about to go to Shoney's or something. I don't know where y'all go to eat in a small town.
Shoney's is not the 80s, bro.
He's not as old as we are, Tony.
I just, what restaurants are there in the small
Western
town?
Western Sizzlin'.
Yeah, exactly.
We literally have a place called the Redneck Gourmet.
There you go. Okay, sorry.
So, I mean, honestly, Spam would have tasted good at this point. Yeah. So we leave. Obviously, it's not like everything was perfect when we leave. I'm
You're a brand new infant.
Yeah, I've got Jesus, but I've also got a lot of me.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of me in the way. And there's a lot of habits and lifestyles that I've built over time that you know, still have to be worked through. And that's the kind of thing. You know, God changed my heart, but everything else was still there. Mm-hmm. And so he was working and still working. Ask my wife, she'll tell you, there's a lot to do still.
Mm-hmm.
So we get out and I was, staying with Amber. We were, doing a lot of things we weren't supposed to be doing. I was like, hey, we're not going to do this anymore. It's like, I can't live with you and say that I'm a Christian. Like, that's not acceptable. And I remember as a late 20s man, I went to go live with my mother in her guest room. That was super fun for about 6 months until I could get a stable job, save up some money, actually, make an honest woman out of Amber, get married, get us a decent place to stay, get those things. And we just said, hey, we didn't start right, but we're going to restart right.
Hmm.
Right. We're going to honor that. God and what That's we're doing
good.
Now.
That is good.
Yeah. Not going to start. We didn't start right, but we can restart right. Man, there's so many people in that situation right now that are like, oh, well, I already messed it up.
No, man, it's never too late.
No, never.
It's never too late to honor God in what you do. And the thing with that is like, man, when I saw this woman who was willing to go through that for me, like there was no question.
Sure.
At that, it's like, I wouldn't have done that for her.
Mm.
I mean, if we're going to be really honest, at that point in my life, I would not have done that for her. Sure. I wouldn't have done it for anybody.
Mm.
And to see what she was willing to go through for such a mess, man.
Mm.
And she needed to be honored. And if I wanted God to honor that relationship, we had to honor him in what we did.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so we were going to restart and do it the right way. And we did.
Mm-hmm.
And as we kind of went through things, we'll get to the name thing. So we talked, we teased the name change last time or my name.
Yeah.
So I actually changed it to that.
Okay.
Because
I was telling them when, you know, they came over. I was like, you know, Eric and I were talking. I've never heard anybody with a last name Nathan, you know. So where did that name come from? And so.
Yeah. So my mom has been married a lot. I had a few stepdads growing up. Every one of them like adopted us as they married my mom. I thought kind of impressed her probably. Mm-hmm. And so like my name had changed so many times. And they were all of these men who were not great guys and men that weren't really in my life. And I'm thinking, all right, we're starting fresh. And I don't want to carry a name that carries all that negative mm-hmm. with it. I definitely don't want to carry the name of an abusive person or a dad who left or somebody I don't even know. And so I was like, all right, we're going to restart. Like, what do you pick? Like, we're always going to be Smith, Philip Smith. Like, that's like,
could be like Morris, but I'm sorry. Yeah, so I was trying to think of rich people. Morris.
Yeah. So I'm like, all right, what do I pick? Well, you know, through this process and what God does in healing me in so many ways, man, it kind of, it's funny. My brother had been, you know, dead for 17 years at this point. But like even healing that relationship postmortem in that, in my view of him and reconciling that. And I thought, really, he was the only good man I ever knew. Like the only good man I ever saw growing up was my brother. And so Nathan is actually his first name. Mm. And so I changed my name to his because I thought that's the best legacy I could carry.
Wow.
Isn't that cool?
That is really cool.
Yeah. I love that.
Mm-hmm. So. I'm just curious. How did your mom think about that?
I mean, he was her favorite. She was good with it.
Yeah.
I know how that feels, Wayne, being the favorite.
No, I mean, and she knew why, right? So, yeah. I mean, and I was real clear about why. And I wanted to talk to my family about it before I started doing those kind of things, you know?
Sure.
But I mean, you know, I think in the explanation of why. And I didn't do it like, oh, I just got out of jail. I'm going to go change my name. Like this was after some time where they could see, because let's be honest, man, I had faked it for short periods of time before.
Sure.
And they needed to see some consistency to know that, hey, this is legit.
Right, right.
And so it wasn't until after some of that went by, but everybody was super supportive.
Yeah.
Mom was on board. So.
That's awesome.
So do we continue the story about how you got to where you are now?
That's up to Jeff. Jeff's in charge.
I mean, Jeff's not in charge, by the way.
Where's Justin?
Who? Well,
I mean, I think we need to finish this story. I think he needs to share, because I think it's equally cool. We can do it on the third episode.
Want to do a third one?
Yeah, we can do that.
But I want him to come back and we'll share, like, really how his life has changed. I mean, things weren't immediately easy.
No,
sure.
But through consistency and faithfulness, God shows out and exceeds expectations. But I think it's a really cool story to continue, because I do want to ask too, because it sounds like your mom is now still, I mean, your mom is a part of your life.
For sure.
So at some point I want to get to full circle there and, you know, she's got to, be a big part. I mean, this is a big part of her life too now, to see where you are now and how, you know, all this stuff came about. And so I think we should do that.
All right, we'll do it.
See, this is how you end it.
My bad, Tom.
Okay.
You're so much more professional.
Hit the button, Jeff. Hit the button.
I know.
That was a really long outro. But yes, no, Philip, thanks, man. I love your story. I love to hear what God does.
It's really God's story, and Philip just happened to be a member.
That's true.
And that's all of our stories are. You know, people will say, man, I don't have a big story like that. You don't need, it's not about
the big story. Your story is important.
That's exactly right. And it's all about God's presence and his, you know, it's him that's doing everything.
Man, you know what my favorite story is? My favorite story is the kid who said yes to Jesus early enough to avoid all the crap that I didn't.
That's what we pray for our kids. I've told my son that, you know, and my son came to Christ and we, you know, at an early age, but we saw a change in him. And, you know, now it's like I want him to continue building that relationship, like be very focused on that. Like, don't waste this time. Like, you know, you could be so much more – than I was at your age and all that. So that's right. But, you know, we're thankful that the Lord is merciful. I will share a little story. You know, Justin talks about, hey, you know, because people are like, oh, Lord, come now, come now. I'm sure I'm guilty of saying that. Lord, just come on back. But, you know, him not coming back is just the strongest sign of grace and mercy because he is holding back judgment and with the other hand extending out, wanting people to come to him. And so that's what other picture of grace and mercy is there than that. So,
yeah. So as we wrap up the session, I want you to think about those in your life that perhaps you have a child that was following in the same footsteps as Philip, and maybe that relationship's broken, hurt. You don't see any positive outcome coming from that. Don't give up praying.
And there could be opposite. Like you could have a mother or father that you're estranged from, or a sibling you're estranged from.
Yeah, those relationships that you just don't see where the gospel's ever going to make it through. Don't give up. Keep praying. Mm-hmm. God's in the business of working miracles and softening the hardest of hearts, man.
And Jeff, I encourage them. Look, if someone out there needs prayer, we will pray for you. Send us an email.
Yeah,
I'm not saying that to be funny, but send us a note. If you don't know us personally, if you do, text us, and we'll keep it private if we need to. You tell us.
Yeah, I mean, and this is a very sensitive one. And so if you found yourself in a similar situation that Philip was in and you need to talk to somebody, please reach out.
Yeah. Please, we will reach out. I mean, we will talk to you. We will keep it private. We take that very seriously, but you can send us an email. You can text us, whatever.
Yeah.
So.
Absolutely. We're here for you, and whoever needs to hear it, man, we love you. Thanks for tuning in.
Thank you, guys.
All right, so can we get an outro that's between...